Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is a show in season 5. If I could...
Baba Booey.
Shut up, Leonard.
Wiggler and Jess, here till it ends. Need it to pass or fail Greendale with all of our friends. The brightest timeline makes you say...
Touché.
Community building is here to stay.
Unsubscribe.
Yeah, that's right. It's community building here on Post Show Recaps, talking about Community Season 5, Episodes 10 and 11. We are talking about advanced Dungeons and Dragons. And we are also talking about G.I. Jeff, a combo platter here on the Community Podcast. Of course, I am Josh Wiggler, and if she were a G.I. Joe, I do think that Mulch is an appropriate name for a G.I. Joe. So here comes Jess Sterling. What's up, Jess?
Mulch is in the house. Ready to go, Joe. Go, Joe. Go, Joe.
Or Jessica Gordon Diehard is also another potentially good name.
Works. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I prefer Dingleberry to anything else.
Do you know what, Jess? I don't know that you should be making up nicknames for yourself. I think I'm figuring this out.
Yeah, I think I should be banned, honestly.
Maybe don't do the nicknames for yourself, Jess. I don't think so. But here we are back on Community Building. Apologies, a bit of a delay on this week's Community Building, as well as the unannounced combining of episodes 10 and 11 schedules just bearing out this way, not just because of the Daily Succession podcasts that we have been mentioning over the past couple of weeks, Jess. Life, as it often does, found a way to screw up my Wednesday pretty severely. So we had to push the community recording to it is Sunday, March 12th. We'll turn this thing right around. So hopefully it's going to be your podcast feed here very, very quickly, folks. And gosh, we've got 1 week left of Community Season 5 before a bit of a Succession and Yellow Jackets themed hiatus, Jess. We're
going to
do
the
final two episodes of Season 5 in next week's podcast. So 2 weeks, 4 episodes of Community. Let's get it all done.
Yeah, then we'll be on a little bit of a break before we get into the final season, if you can believe it. Final season of Community coming up.
Summer school, baby. That's how this is going to bear out. We will return with Community Season 6 in June for the summer session. I'm really excited. I want to prolong this thing as much as possible because it's going to be a little bit of an existential crisis. It's going to be like I'm going to experience my own animated G.I. Joe psychedelic experience when Community Building is reaching the end of Community Season 6, because I will suddenly feel deeply, deeply old. Old.
Well, yeah, and then we'll find out that you're secretly 40.
Yeah, well, no, but getting closer than I'd like to admit. Like, I actually, so just to lay some stuff down, this is two episodes of Community, that one of which I really didn't like, and one of which I really liked a lot, and I think I have them flipped from the popular consensus. I think that I really dislike the one that people tend to like. I think I really like the ones that a lot of people seem to dislike. So we'll talk all of that through. But as far as the G.I. Jeff of it all, it's like, oh, yeah, literally, I'm watching this the day after my 38th birthday and I met all of my G.I. Joes that I used to play with. I'm like, okay, yeah, I see you, Jeff Winger. I see you, JW. I see you, JW, kissing 40. My gosh. So maybe some personal biases coming into play to talk about G.I. Jeff today. But of course, we want to get all the feedback we could possibly get from all of you, your ratings, all of that good stuff. You could send it into community at postshowrecaps.com. Rate each and every episode on a scale of 0 to 4 Roy's. Nope, it's cools. Just kidding. The Roy system is not what we are doing here. Yes. And of course, if people want the ad-free and often early access versions of community building, you go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps. You sign up at any level. You get those podcasts without commercial interruption. Often you get to listen to these live. Unfortunately, we are not able to be live for these final two season 5 podcasts, but you're with us in spirit. You're with us in spirit for sure. So let's get into it, Jess. Two episodes of Community. Can you set me up for these as far as what are sort of like the broader ramifications or the broader interpretations of these episodes as we're rounding the bend on season 5, which started so strong? And I am getting the vibe that maybe it's like, then it kind of just, you know, maybe like is starting to like peter out a tiny bit.
This is why, at least for me, like we talked previously about some seasons feeling very uneven, feeling very up and down, and kind of you hit some highs and you hit some lows. Season 5 starts off very, very strong. And for me personally, and I think a lot of others, it kind of ends with a bit of a meh and like a fizzle. And these two episodes are kind of part of that. I would say the next two episodes are also maybe worse.
Than these two.
I guess it kind of depends on who you are, right? I think a lot of people enjoy Advanced Dungeons and Dragons as a successor to the original D&D episode. I think most people aren't super high on G.I. Jeff because I can speak from personal experience as someone who did not grow up with G.I. Joe. I know what G.I. Joe is, of course, but I wasn't someone who watched the show, played with the action figures, anything like that. Really, really hard to get into that episode. There isn't as much of a Greendale story that is highly relatable as much of it is like very inside baseball of G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. And then the final two episodes are kind of meh. So I think this is why a lot of people are like, well, of the 13 episodes, we start off very, very strong with probably about the first, 8, maybe 9 episodes. And then it kind of falls off the last 4.
I get that. That's all right. You know, I think that the first episodes of this season being as strong as they are will still keep, unless things really hit a wall here for the final couple of episodes of the show.
Yeah.
I still think season 5 is either going to be my favorite of the show or still very competitively close. Regardless, we do have two episodes that we have to talk about today, one of which I really had a hard time getting through.
Yeah.
So why don't we take them down one at a time here. Two at a time would be impressive. I don't know that we would be able to pull that off. That would be very, very hard to do. But we get to Advanced Dungeons and Dragons first, directed by Joe Russo, which is a surprise to me. Initially airs March 20th, 2014. It's a Dan Harmon and Matt Roller, great last name for a Dungeons and Dragons writer.
Truly.
Joint here. And I guess this one feels to me like, well, we praise Community for not going back to the paintball well, and then it's like, oh, well, they're really just like, I just want to roll some dice, feels like the reason this episode exists without any real, like, well, there's an actual utility to this episode. Feels like that's not entirely here unless this is sort of just meant to be, let's do a hickey episode.
That's what it is. It really is. Let's do a hickey episode. How can we do a hickey episode? Well, let's have hickey have a nerdy son and let them play D&D again.
Yeah.
So
that's it, huh?
That's really how we did it, right? It's what it is.
I cannot think of an instance, Jess, where I've had to break up watching an episode of Community.
Only 22 minutes, so.
And it's only 22 minutes, and I couldn't do Advanced Dungeons and Dragons in a single sitting. Part of this is a personal issue. I am very hard pressed to answer the question because I've interviewed a lot of people. Humble brag here, folks. I don't know if you know this professional entertainment journalist, Josh Wiggler over here. I've interviewed a lot of really fun and cool people. And so when people say like, who's your favorite person you've ever interviewed? Who's the best interview you've ever had? Like, I really have to think there's a lot of different answers. I don't really know. And then I get asked the question of like, who's the worst interview? And I know the answer to that question. Anyway, so David Cross is in this episode of Community.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Completely unrelated. David Cross is here.
Totally unrelated that David Cross is in this episode of Community. And I'm not entirely enchanted by Hank. How about that? I don't think I don't know why Nikki all that much. I don't think this character is a character for me. And he was kind of hard to endure, I have to say.
I think my biggest issue with Hank as a character is that while it's not unheard of to have a terrible relationship with your parents, right? Jeff Winger, classic example of not having a good relationship with his father. I don't know that we get a ton of information on why they don't have a great relationship. It doesn't, the show doesn't give me enough to fault Hickey for like, to what's going on. Besides the fact, like, was he just not there? That's the reason? That's the whole thing? Like, that's the entire conversation is, you just weren't around.
Yeah.
If that's the case, fine, great, whatever. But like, to me, they don't explore enough of that parent-child relationship for me to be like, Hank just comes off like an a-hole most of the episode.
He's not very likable.
He's not.
I don't think he's very likable. Even I think David Cross's best role, inarguably, Tobias Funke, is not the most likable character. And Tobias is often very funny because he is just like scumming his way into terrible situations and just like falling into disaster after disaster. And he's like a pathetic person to behold. And that is where a lot of that comedy comes from. But I would never accuse Tobias of being a likable character on Arrested Development. And I think that maybe the dynamic here for me would be more successful if there was a little bit more of an available rooting interest in Hank. But Hickey has already been such an improvement over the vibe of Pierce that I like Hickey.
So we're rooting for Hickey, not for Hank. Not even rooting for like Hickey and Hank because, to be honest, Hank doesn't seem like someone I want to hang around with anyway. So that's my main issue is like, you're going to bring in a new character. The show wants us to root for Hickey and Hank to like kind of make amends, but they don't give us a reason beyond the fact that Hickey wants to hang out with his grandson, which in my opinion, it's like, fine, Hank, like, let Hickey hang out with your grandson. Doesn't mean you need to be there all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know how old the kid is, but, you know, whatever. He's 3 years old, but still.
The other thing for me is in the initial Dungeons & Dragons episode, it is, like, very mean-spirited for much of it. And Pierce is so awful in so much of it. But the compassion that Neil ends up showing Pierce and the way that the people rally behind Neil gives it a really powerful ending. And especially once you hear after the fact, after Pierce is dead, that those games continued with Neil, that's really very touching and kind of enhances that episode in a big way for me. I think that... We play a lot of Dungeons & Dragons in the post-show recaps, patron Discord. A lot of the patrons of PSR, a lot of the listeners of PSR are big Dungeons & Dragons people. And I would say as like a modest Dungeons & Dragons person, in my experience, the game is at its most fun when there's like real stakes in it.
Yeah.
When it feels like when there's true danger involved. And there's so much true danger involved in that very first version of this. I feel like the stakes don't exist in this episode at all for me. I don't feel hooked into the emotionality of what's going on. I don't feel invested in Hickey and Hank trying to resolve this thing. There's some fun bits here and there. My guy Chang continues to make me laugh a good bit here in season 5, but even that only took it so far. So I felt like if you're going to go back to the Dungeons and Dragons, well, I think that you have to go into it with a really powerful emotional story. I didn't feel connected to this. Other people, I'm sure, do. I had some personal biases in play here as well. And I also think that from a cinematography standpoint, like filmically, experimentally, this just does not hold a candle to the original Dungeons and Dragons episode. This one just kind of feels like it comes across to me anyway as shit, we got to put out episode 10.
Yep.
That's how it feels.
I think the problem is if you're going to do a successor to a really popular genre-based episode you've already done, you better not miss. It better be really good because we're going to be comparing it to the old one. And this one, while I like it more than you do, I still think it's nowhere near as good as the first iteration.
Yeah.
But let's dive in.
Let's do it. So what goes down here in Advanced Dungeons and Dragons?
So the dean comes in and he tells the committee the school needs new insurance. My gosh, their premiums must be skyrocketing.
Huge.
Hickey finds out he wasn't invited to his grandson's third birthday party because his son didn't invite him. He's really upset about it. And he mentions that his son is a big fan of D&D. And Annie, of course, says, we play D&D. We should all play together to help reconnect Hickey with his son. And Jeff says, oh, we prevented a suicide. Fabulous. Neil is doing this and that in the background. And we do see Neil doing this and that in the background.
It would have been mean to not have Neil in here at all. So,
of course.
Nice to see him.
Yeah, and everyone is in on this, especially the dean, who's standing right there, so he must be invited.
Uh-huh.
So we meet Hank, who is played, as you said, by David Cross. He is very confused as to why Hickey is suddenly into D&D, and I love Hickey just saying, it's the dungeons.
It's the dungeons, yeah. Mm-hmm. He just wants to go spelunking.
Yes.
So the session is effectively, there's a necromancer who we have to destroy. The necromancer's at the top of the tower. We got to go to the top of the tower, kill a necromancer.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the stakes. Everyone's going to get a character. Hank is Joseph Gordon Diehard. Really?
Yeah.
Son of Riggs Diehard.
And of course, Hickey is his father, Sir Riggs Diehard. Mm-hmm. But Hank immediately susses everything out and is like, you're trying to force this like bond between me and my dad. So he shuffles all the characters around. And instead, Hank gets Tristram Steelheart, a holy cleric with a mace and a dumb name.
That's unfair. I feel like they're taking a shot at Tristram Shapiro here, famous community director.
Yeah, of course.
That feels like what they're doing, and that seems mean, but also probably, I would imagine, everyone had a good laugh on set.
Yeah.
And if not, but I think that they probably wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, Hickey is playing Tiny Nuggins,
a thief.
Good
name. Great name.
Tiny Nuggins is great.
Is a good name.
Britta is Fibrosis, the ranger. Uh-huh. Shirley is Crouton, the half-orc druid.
Yes.
Annie, Hector the well-endowed, again.
Yep, returns.
Chang plays Dingleberry.
I mean, that's kind of perfect.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And Jeff is Sir Riggs Diehard, and his son is, of course, the Dean.
Joseph Gordon, yes.
Yeah. And so Hank immediately is like, oh, you told me we're supposed to be doing one thing. I want to do the opposite. I want to go off the rails. Do you have a map planned? Surprise, surprise. Abed has a whole binder of ideas here. And so Hickey immediately asks if they're losing. And he says, the only winner is fun. And so this is when Hector tries to lift up Tristram, but Hank casts Torvin's Flesh of Fire and burns both Hector and the bridge, and everyone falls into a ravine below.
Is Torvin's Flesh of Fire a real spell?
Definitely not. You can't. Mm-hmm. They would have had to get a clearance from Wizards of the Coast, which certainly they weren't going to get. So they have to make up all of these spells. You'll hear later, Britta casts something that is very close to Cure Wounds, but not quite Cure Wounds.
Yeah.
They certainly make all of these up for the show.
But
Hickey and Hank are now fighting because Hank is upset. You know, we get the reveal that Hank says he didn't invite Hickey because he wanted to enjoy the party, which just feels like twisting the knife in the wound a bit.
Yes.
Jeff tries to winger speech everything. Fathers and sons, there's a lot of power between them. I spent a long time letting that power push me away from my dad, and I regret it. So whatever between you guys will only get fixed when you're together. And Abed's like, but you're not together. We all need to separate. So we're going to have, again, just like original D&D episode, Hank, Britta, Dean, and Chang are separated from Hickey, Annie, Shirley, and Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
And they make a deal.
A little bit of a split, yeah.
Yeah, so Hank and Hickey come to an arrangement. Whomever kills the necromancer first wins. If Hickey wins, he gets to come to the birthday party. If Hank wins, he says, you don't go to Christmas or Thanksgiving. And this is like this is pretty, I don't know. Like, I just have a tough time.
$20 million and you don't get to come to Christmas. How about that for a deal?
Yeah. This isn't Succession. And so this feels like a little dark for Community. I don't know.
No, you know what? It does, I guess, but it also doesn't feel dark enough. Like, that's the thing for me, where it just feels like sort of arbitrarily mean and dark as opposed to dark and mean with a purpose.
Yeah, we don't know the history of Hank and Hickey. And so right away, I'm like not on Hank's side because this feels like overkill.
Right.
This feels like too much.
It's this really deep hurt that exists between these two characters that is, you know, just being brought to us in a way where, again, I think that we're inclined to have enjoyed Hickey quite a bit up to this point. And so I'm having a hard time buying into looking at Hank making this call as anything other than Hank's just a total butthead. And
yes!
That never really stops for me in this episode. Whereas back when it's, Neil versus Pierce, a big part of that is that Pierce is representing like a kind of evil and malevolence that has no agenda and just exists.
Exactly.
And is like horrible. And how do you vanquish something like that? And so the stakes are high. The stakes are really high there. It's not like personal between him and Neil. It's happening.
It's just,
and it needs to be taken care of. Here there is this very deeply personal thing that the episode does very little successfully for me to get me invested in it.
And worth pointing out that what we know of Hickey and his family, what the show has shown us so far, is that he has one other son. He says he has a gay son that he's helping pay for the wedding for.
Right.
And like, to me, that doesn't match up with the Hickey that Hank is trying to present. So that's the problem, is that like, based on what we know of Hickey, Hank's version of Hickey doesn't make a ton of sense.
Doesn't line up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Dean, meanwhile, is super distraught at being separated from his father, Jeff.
Father. Yeah.
One of the highlights of the episode for me is the Dean.
Yeah.
So Hickey's character runs against Annie's advisement because Annie says we should sleep on it. But they end up running into hobgoblins, and Hickey's choice, I'm going to punch him in the heart. Mm-hmm. And he misses and falls down. Shirley casts Entangle on
Entangle
them.
Entangle is real, isn't it? Or is it Entanglement?
I think it's Entanglement.
Entangle. Okay.
Yeah. There's some other ones that like it could Close be enough. Based on her being a druid.
Yeah.
The hobgoblins end up shooting at Crouton. Annie shoots back at them. And I love Jess saying, you better run. Go find a name that's not just another creature's name plus Hob.
Yeah.
But Crouton dies.
Crouton has died. So we get Shirley out of here quickly.
Very annoying. What the hell?
I know. Well, Shirley has now had the spotlight for a couple of episodes here, Jess. So I guess it's Shirley's turn to go on.
It's just
on
like
time
so
out.
Frustrating, Josh, that like no other character is being kicked out. Everyone else stays the entire time.
Yeah, I don't like it. Crouton
BS.
Is I do love where she says, whenever the wind whispers through the woods, just remember, you got me killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sad that we lose Shirley so quickly in this episode.
Yeah, especially I would have liked to see her play a druid for a bit more, you know?
Yeah.
But Hickey is now pissed. He says he's punched a lot of hearts in his life and he's never missed. And I love Abed's retort of, have you ever been a 3-foot tall halfling running through 2-foot high vines trying to punch a 7-foot monster?
Yeah.
So he says, you got to check your character sheet. Take this game seriously. Your son is.
Does. Yeah.
Yeah. And Annie makes, again, Annie to me, this is her one highlight, I think, in this episode, is when she does what every D&D player would do, is mourn Crouton for 2 seconds and then take all of her belongings.
Raid the body. Yeah, you gotta loot the body. Always
you do,
loot the
of
body.
Course. Yeah.
So Abed's gonna go and check in on everybody. Hank is gonna heal fibrosis. But Britta's like, you're not getting me on your side. You're not gonna help get me to help you kick your dad out of your life. And he's saying, like, you think I'm the bad guy? Do you know where he was for most of my birthdays? A little place that rhymes with not here.
not there.
Not
and
there.
It's Times Square.
Times Square.
This line from Chang, I'm not going to lie, Josh, killed me.
Chang is elite this season.
He's doing a great job. I got to admit it.
I won't hear it any other way. Like,
this Chang, is so Chang, funny.
They figured out Chang for sure.
They finally, again, I think my theory holds true. You don't need Chang and Pierce. You just need one.
Yeah.
And so without Pierce, Chang is able to shine.
Yeah, he's thriving. So they get attacked by sky spiders.
Yes.
There's a sky spider attack. And they're gonna kill the sky spiders. Tristram's able to cast Speak with Monsters.
Yeah, like a Speak with Animals, Speak with Beasts.
Yeah, and he's basically able to get them to be their allies and give us a ride to the Necromancer now.
Yeah. The one tiny little callback bit that we get in this episode that I really appreciated is when Britta goes to fist bump Hank. He does the same fist bump that Hickey does, where instead of actually bumping fists, he knocks on the fist. I love that. I hadn't noticed that ever before, and I really liked that. That was like a cute little thing, nod to Hickey there.
That's a good detail. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's combat ensuing in the Hickey group. This one is for Crouton, and Hickey decides, you know what? I'm going to take two of them alive and interrogate them.
Mm-hmm.
Which very, very Mike Ehrmantraut moment here.
Yes, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
He's taken the interrogation scene that we get from Jonathan Banks. This is fun. I like this. It's Jonathan Banks being very goofy and silly, but also doing his most Mike Ehrmantraut impression while interrogating fake versions of Abed. Cute, not hot, but definitely cute.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely not as good as the scenes where Britta's like, oh my God, you're being oppressed.
Yeah.
And the whole Annie moments with Abed. Definitely not as good, but still like one of the highlights of this episode, I'd say.
For sure. I mean, among the best scenes in this episode, inarguably, which is not, you know, the best sign for the episode for me personally.
Right. So they do interrogate the hobgoblins. And he does break one of them, and they do get directions to the tower. And then we flash back to Hank's group, where he is like singing in Elvish or something. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. It's a little over the top. It is kind of funny. And they also have directions to the tower. Meanwhile, Dean's character continues to write letters to Jeff. Father, forgive me. I've traveled so far from you. How many game days since the Skull River ripped us apart? How many real hours since I've gone pee? He sends word on the wings of sparrows. And if we find out that one of them has to rub the family sword while the other one rubs the hilt, and twin beacons of light will reveal their locations to one another. Each night I will think of you and rub, praying for the night fate will find us rubbing together. Time after time, Abed is throwing these notes out. But then again, this is where I'm like, did they actually consult someone who plays D&D on this? Where he rolls 2 zeros in order to finally get it to succeed. And I'm like, was that a 100 instead of a 100 sided die?
I don't know. I mean, I know that Dan Harmon is a huge D&D guy. You know, look no further than obviously Harmon Quest, but the actor who played Annie's brother not terribly long ago. So I'm not sure. I don't know. At this point, I think for me, the problem was like, I was somewhere between like, freaking Hank. And then another part of me was just like, I'm kind of ready to move on from the episode. It lost me really quickly. So I was, you know, I lost focus on this one. I have to tell you, I was not invested. I was uninvested in this one.
Yeah. So Jeff does get the note. He rubs the hilt and then the beams bring them together. They'll arrive at the tower at the same exact time.
Yeah. So Jeff is like, I don't know that this is such a good idea. I don't know that this is going to be something that's good for you, Hickey. But Hickey is saying that his son's going to do anything to win. This is a man who thinks of grandchildren like trophies. This is what Hank is saying, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So they're both like starting to get really argumentative in their respective corners. He knights Dingleberry to like get him to join his cause. That's all that Chang ever wants, right? He just wants to be lifted into the group. So knighting Dingleberry is a good tactic. Yes.
Yeah, and this is where I think the episode is just, it doesn't do enough for me. Where everyone reunites, the groups are against each other, and I'm like, how did Hank like get Britta and them to switch allegiances so quickly? It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. But they all start fighting, but not before Dean tries to hug his father. Jeff refuses, and Dean gets impaled on Jeff's sword. He hugs Jeff and says, Worth it.
Sun Slayer. Yeah.
I love Jeff saying, I hold Britta's face in a puddle.
Uh-huh.
Dingo Berry Smash.
Everyone starts dying.
We do get Hank doing lightning bolt, which I think at the time was probably a shout out to an iconic LARPing video. At least that's how I interpreted it in my head, where there's a guy who's doing a live action role playing, just throwing tennis balls at someone going, lightning bolt.
I'm sure it was. Yeah. I'm sure it was.
Great
yeah.
stuff. So that's funny. But it's just Hickey and Hank. That's all that's left. And the necromancer got out of here and they're pissed. They're mad that the necromancer escaped.
Yeah. And Abed says, listen, like, this is what happens. You guys made a ton of noise fighting each other. And he's going to leave through the back and he's out there somewhere. You might find him if you can get your crap together.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeff says, listen, let's all get Froyo. But Hank and Hickey want to stay and fight. And this is when they actually start getting along, where Hank offers to heal Hickey if Hickey gives him half the potions. The rest of the group leaves and they say they can't stand being in the same room. But I also don't think they can handle being apart. And I think they just found a way to avoid doing either. And that's the best most fathers and sons can do.
Brander.
It's whatever, yeah. You know, it's fine.
That's fine. I mean, I guess it's a sweet enough message, but I don't know. It didn't feel, you know what, it would have for me felt like, I think I could have gotten over a storyline that I wasn't terribly invested in Hickey and Hank, especially if I'm not thrilled about the casting, if the D&D of it all was sharper and better. And
right.
it wasn't nearly as good as it was back in the original Dungeons and Dragons episode. So I think part of this for me is it's so inferior to the first one for me that I think it's getting extra penalty points in addition to some of the other stuff I didn't love about it. So
yeah.
I don't know. What are you
That's fair. We get to the end credit scene. Abed is DMing for a bunch of stuffed animals. There's the names Mr. Tickles, Count Frogula, very funny. Hillary Rodham Kitten.
Hillary Rodham Kitten is a great name. That's very funny.
And so they're having like a little tea party. Annie comes out and she's like, I can't sleep without my stuffies. Abed leaves.
I think that moment when Annie peeks her head out was enough to make the streets ahead for me. Just barely. Annie not being able to sleep without her stuffies, I thought was kind of cute.
Yeah, Abed walks away in his underpants.
Yeah.
And that's it. I had it behind. I'm just behind. Like, it's meh.
Well,
to me.
Here's what we'll do. Let's put a pin in streets ahead, streets behind. Let's revisit this at the end of the G.I. Joe episode, because I am very confident that should be a streets ahead, and I would love to talk you through it when we get
please
there.
Yes, please, so yes.
We'll,
okay,
so we'll be able to do that. So how about let's take a quick commercial break here. We're going to do G.I. Jeff. We'll talk through G.I. Jeff, then we'll do all the meow meows and such, and we will close out these two episodes of season 5 of Community. Stay tuned.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
All right, Jess, let's talk about it. Season 5, episode 11, G.I. Jeff. So this whole episode, so I guess let me ask you some questions.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your relationship to G.I. Joe, such as it exists at all?
I know that it exists.
Uh-huh.
I know that it is like fight, battle, action figures, like pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
And I know that the catchphrase is go, Joe.
Yeah, that's one.
And
of
that
them.
Is the extent of my knowledge
okay,
of G.I.
Cool.
Joe.
So I grew up on G.I. Joe.
Okay.
I grew up on G.I. Joe as somebody who is close enough to Winger age in this episode. Like this was my stuff. So
I obviously love my superheroes. I talked about on Everything is Super with Kevin Mahadeo, our superhero podcast on Post Show. Mm-hmm. I've talked a lot about how it was like the X-Men cartoons were the things that really got me into superheroes in the first place, and then Batman the Animated Series and things like that, more so than comic books for me. Before all of that for me were the G.I. Joe cartoons and the G.I. Joe action figures. My brother and I were like spoiled rotten with our action figure output as kids. And we got a lot of like the Hasbro toys, the Transformers, the G.I. Joes. My cousin and I, who I've talked about a bit on the podcast, he and I were so into our G.I. Joe figures together. His father used to call them, "Stop playing with your characters," is what he would tell us all the time. I got into this phase in like late junior high, which is middle school for most people, to early high school, where I had all of my G.I. Joes and I started to like customize them. So I'd like take a screwdriver and they have like these screws in the back that would
you would
hold.
Pop the heads off?
Yes, but I would put new heads on. So I would do like mix and matches and I would make my own new characters and I would love to do it. And it was super
it's like you're
fun.
Making Legos out of G.I. Joes.
I still have a few of them lying around somewhere. They're like very sadly in like the Toy Story dustbin at this point in time.
Yeah.
I don't have anyone in my life that I think would accept them. And also it's going to be way too much of a Herculean feat to go through all of them. Mm-hmm. So at some point that's going to be like a very sad day in the proverbial attic for me. But I loved G.I. Joe. I loved the cartoon show quite a bit. This episode of Community is a really, really, really good homage to G.I. Joe. You got to be a G.I. Joe person, I think, to appreciate the ways in which it is such a good homage to G.I. Joe. The theme song is pretty much exact. They have exact voice actors are repeating their roles. Flint, the actor who's playing Flint, is straight up. I believe that the actor who played Cobra Commander, I think, is deceased. And I think he may have been gone already by the time that this episode was airing. He's also the person who does Starscream in the Transformers cartoons, and he has this iconically shrill voice. So they get Cobra Commander's entire vibe totally right.
Okay.
It's exactly how Cobra Commander rides. Like that's his he's always talking like this, Jess. Like it's just nonstop awful. Even when he gets incinerated by the end of the episode, and you start to see like all like sort of like these reptilian serpentine features underneath there. This was a big part of the G.I. Joe animated movie where Cobra Commander and Roadblock become a duo for a while. And
I'm sorry, there's a person named Roadblock.
Yeah, you see Roadblock very quickly in this, actually. Wow. He's one of like the background G.I. Joes. Most of the background G.I. Joes are real G.I. Joes. There's, you know,
okay.
You see Duke is on the tribunal. Flint is a real G.I. Joe. Scarlet is glimpsed there. Snake Eyes, and appropriately, has no dialogue. Snake Eyes isn't supposed to talk, despite what the movies tell you. In the G.I. Joe live-action movies are horrible. Dwayne The Rock Johnson plays Roadblock in the second G.I. Joe movie, to give you a sense of like Roadblock vibe. But in the G.I. Joe animated movie, Roadblock and Cobra Commander, they're like become this unlikely pair because this new guy Serpentor has sort of taken control over Cobra, and then a bunch of these people, Globulus and Nemesis Enforcer and some other person, they come from Cobra Law and they take over from Serpentor too, and Serpentor's kind of losing some power, but Cobra Commander's been forced to eat a shitload of spores and he's starting to get worse and turn more
Last
and more
of
reptilian.
Us.
It's very Last of Us, and so he has this iconic moment where his helmet gets smashed open and he hisses at Roadblock, who's looking at him because he has like this snake face that we've never seen before, and he goes, once was a man is the thing that Cobra Commander says, and he looks like that. He looks like what he looks like when he's getting incinerated at the end of this episode. So all of that I could keep going is to say that there are tremendous amounts of Easter eggs in here. I have outed myself now as not just a huge G.I. Joe fan, but as somebody who was a huge G.I. Joe fan into like my teenage years, a huge, hugely embarrassing memory that I possess, like that I'm getting chills as I'm reciting this right now, is my older brother's friend coming over to the house once and like coming into my room and catching me in the middle of like an elaborate story driven playtime.
Oh no. Toys,
and I'm like 16 years old.
Oh,
it's like pretty old, and I loved this stuff. It was so imaginative and transportative for me. The toys themselves are like highly flexible in addition to being super customizable, and they're really nicely detailed too. So they were just like very great playthings. They were the perfect size. They're 3 3/4. They have like an elastic band that holds their whole body together. The G.I. Joes that you see in like the live action commercial components of G.I. Jeff, that's the stuff. They also have like these customized versions that they clearly got made. And then all of the various characters from Community who end up getting these like G.I. Joe types of characters, I don't think it's in every case, or at least I didn't clock it for every single case, but most of them have roots in actual G.I. Joe characters. I couldn't track Buzzkill, unfortunately. I wasn't.
Well, that's just because Brit is a Buzzkill, no?
I know, but like the aesthetic is almost always very similar to G.I. Joe. So Wingman is very similar to Duke, who is like the leader of G.I. Joe, or one of the leaders of G.I. Joe. I forget which one. Is it Three Kids? Is Shirley,
yeah.
She's dressed up as Stalker, who is one of the G.I. Joes. Abed as Fourth Wall is Spirit, who is very much a G.I. Joe, where Jeff is like, I feel like this is maybe a little racist. Like,
yes.
Yeah, there's some problematic stuff in the G.I. Joe universe for sure. Chang, hilariously, is Quick Kick, who is not a Cobra character, is a G.I. Joe character who they have here as part of Cobra, which is kind of funny as a way of like, you never really know where Chang is. Like, Chang shouldn't be on the side of the back. Like, he wants to be G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
So having him be a G.I. Joe who's dressed up as a Cobra, I think was pretty fun. And I loved Quick Kick. That was my favorite action figure, and I lost him on
vacation. Of course, Chang is your favorite one.
He's one of my very favorite G.I. Joes. Yeah. So it's ridiculous. So I really liked this episode, clearly. It really spoke to me. I think that Jeff having this midlife crisis while having a G.I. Joe experience feels like something that I had as like a young life crisis.
Mm-hmm.
As I was like on the edge of leaving high school and going off to college and being like, I think you got to stop. I think you got to stop with all of this stuff. So anyway, I love it. I totally get it if it's not for the royal you out there who have not jived with G.I. Joe. But I'm just here to say, as a huge G.I. Joe fan, they did it. They did their job. They aced it. Whether or not they should have done this is another question altogether. But as far as doing it, mission accomplished. 100% success rate as far
as. My biggest gripe is that when you do something that is so hyper specific, you're bound to alienate a good portion of your audience.
Totally,
yep. And I think they've had situations where they've done homages, right? Like we have the Chicken Fingers episode, we have Paintball with the Star Wars and, you know, all of that. And like, you don't have to know the property, the original property in order to enjoy it. Whereas this episode, it feels more like if you're not familiar with G.I. Joe, it's just not for you. Like, I didn't get any of the jokes. I got very lost in what was going on besides, okay, I know these are good guys, these are bad guys. And like, I don't get any of the jokes for the most part. Besides, I can read and I mean, I'm smart enough to figure out some of the jokes, oh, there's no actual killing. I can't believe they killed anybody.
So what's funny is this is another reason why it's very funny that Chang is Quick Kick. This is really nerdy. Are you ready?
Yes.
So the G.I. Joe cartoons, yeah, they're always just like shooting at each other and nothing of substance ever happens in terms of
right.
Like,
no one's gonna die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the G.I. Joe animated movie, Duke gets skewered with a poisonous cobra that is like turned into like a spear.
Ooh.
And it seems like he dies, and it's a really impactful moment literally at the end of the movie. We just got a call from HQ, Duke's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Something that happens, and that's as dangerous as it ever got in the original animated stuff. But G.I. Joe also has roots in comic books. Marvel Comics did a big run of G.I. Joe in the 80s turning into the 90s, and those comics were surprisingly deadly. Actual deaths occurred, canonical deaths occurred within the G.I. Joe comic book universe. And it's very funny that Chang, a character that you probably, of all of these characters, if they could have killed one of you off, get rid of Chang.
Yeah.
And many other people would probably feel that way. Chang as Quick Kick is embodying one of the G.I. Joes that got killed in the comic books, in like an iconic issue of the comics where it was like Quick Kick. Doc dies, I think. There's a radio guy whose name I'm forgetting, but like a few of the G.I. Joes got killed after they were like taken prisoner. And there's like this miscommunication of execute the G.I. Joes. And they were like, whoa, okay, I guess we're going to do it. But it's like, don't execute the G.I. Joes was the message initially. And they misinterpreted it. So they start like going after them. And they try to do this big prison break. And unfortunately, this heroic, valiant effort ends in a fail. And the G.I. Joes who were imprisoned get killed. And Quick Kick is one of them. So to see Chang as Quick Kick, an iconically dead G.I. Joe in the Marvel comic book universe, on an episode that is saying that no one ever gets killed on G.I. Joe, I laughed about that. So there's a lot of that stuff for the G.I. Joe fans. It's very, very here. Very, very here.
Yeah, there's just not a ton of stuff for the people that aren't G.I. Joe fans.
I totally get that.
It's my biggest gripe about it. Like, there are a few jokes that are funny, but for the most part, I'm just like, I'm not following any of this.
I get it. Well, then let's run through it quick, because I think we've talked about it a lot. So, like, it begins in G.I. Joe territory, and there's Annie, who is, like, a gender-bent shipwreck.
Yeah, she's
Britta.
Tight ship, which makes sense. And she's like, it's like the scantily clad clothing, of course.
A great character. Shipwreck is like a sailor who's got a parrot and stuff. And so she's playing that. Someone will have to tell me who Buzzkill is. I feel like I'm missing an obvious thing. And then Shirley is Stalker as Three Kids. And they're you know, just like fighting everything, and everything's going decently well. And then like Destro's going to escape, because Cobra always escapes. And Destro, who I was surprised they didn't turn the Dean into Destro, because he's iconically bald. I thought that they would try to match that up. He's just like, he's like, I've got an idea. He shoots Destro's parachute and Destro just plummets to his death, which I thought was pretty funny. It's like, yeah, maybe you could have done some of that. So Destro gets killed. We get the iconic open to G.I. Joe. We get the theme song. We get to see all these different characters. It's really fun. Like, the music is perfect. Very, very funny. And then we get to the tribunal, which is run by Duke, who is the blonde guy who I thought Wingman was based on, maybe still was. But they are ending up getting imprisoned for killing Cobra, despite the fact that Jeff's like, we're in like a forever war. We got to kill Cobra. What are we supposed to do? Be in forever war forever? So they get sent into the bunker with a bunch of G.I. Joe rejects.
Yeah, Deep Dish, Shark Arms, Weird Head, Home Free, Placeholder, and Sleep Apnea.
Yeah, none of them, I think, are actually anything, at least as far as I was able to tell. But Abed as fourth wall, he is embodying Spirit. He is playing Spirit, and he is telling them that we are in a situation where we are perceiving life as a syndicated children's cartoon. And this is when you start getting like the first hints that something is happening. Right. And that
anytime Greendale is said is when we hear like hospital noises. We hear them actually calling Wingman Jeff. Also, I did look it up. I don't know that Buzzkill is actually a specific reference.
I was trying to look it up. Yeah.
From what I found, it's saying that Buzzkill is an homage to over-the-top accessories given to a few of the G.I. Joe toys, where they started using more exotic weaponry and they're like extremely outlandish. An example is Crystal Ball, which came with a hypnotizing shield.
Yes.
So I think Buzzkill was more of a reference of them calling her Buzzkill in the past. Yeah. And then they just gave her the buzzsaw hand on top of that.
I was searching this. I was trying to figure this out myself about Buzzkill specifically. And I came across a Reddit post about this episode that was talking about, did anyone else notice Buzzkill in the G.I. Joe episode? She had a yellow cast to most of her face, implying mustard.
Hilarious.
Everyone else had normal skin tones, but her close-ups always show yellow blotches. There's a lot of attention to detail in this episode. I gotta give it
credit for that. The story is lacking, but
story kind of lacking, but I think like the actual like attention to detail from the G.I. Joe standpoint and also just within community lore, I think that they do a really good job here.
Something's
clearly going on in the real world, and that there's something that is happening outside of the cartoon world, and Jeff is losing his mind. Meanwhile, at Cobra headquarters, Cobra Commander's the best. This episode made me want to go back and watch some old G.I. Joe. It's been forever since I've watched old G.I. Joe. I was like, listen, I'm not good at eulogies. I've never had to give one. It's like, how did G.I. Joe do this? We've been shooting at each other for years. Vice Cobra Commander calls, and Cobra Commander's like insulted that Vice Cobra Commander didn't come to Destro's funeral.
Yeah.
So we're going to be working with Vice Cobra Commander here for a good bit of time. Yeah. So there's going to be a Cobra invasion, and this guy Deep Dish has been doing the Andy Dufresne thing. He's
yes.
been chipping away and listening to nothing but Smash Mouth for the last however many
so
decades.
Funny. I did like that bit. And of course, he has the hole is finally ready. And that's when like an explosion happens and they're able to escape through like yes. this hole in the wall. And this is when we get the joke about suppressive fire, where this I understood, where Jeff is like, oh, I'm just going to use suppressive fire to like stop them. But of course, he kills a bunch of people. Uh-huh. And so then the G.I. Joes attempt to suppress a fire them, yes. but they do get away in a plane or a jet or a whatever G.I. Joe mechanism this is.
Sure, yeah. So they escape, yeah. they get out of there, but then Wingman, he slips further into his unconscious state as yeah. Fourth Wall continuously brings up Greendale.
Yeah. And this is when I did enjoy, because as someone who grew up in the 90s and loved those toy commercials that, were on, like, I still remember some of the jingles from mm-hmm. toy commercials. And I have, you know me, I have a terrible memory, but I can still remember like baby born, yeah. like, you know what I mean? Like little yes. jingles like that. And so I really did appreciate the commercials for the action figures, where they, especially cause they go over in this one, the names, right? So Buzzkill, all government is a lie. Tight ship, I control everything or else.
Yeah.
Three kids, my family comes first. And then, of course, Fourth Wall. Doesn't this guy also do the voice for the He-Man commercials?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same person. I did not do the research on that. I would not be shocked at all. Wingman's going to wake up. He's having these visions of these little boys who are playing with action figures. And he wants to go to Greendale. They're going to try and figure that out. They're going to start infiltrating Greendale. We are going to see the Vice Cobra Commander's his cadre of villains. We see Chang as Quick Kick. We see that Hickey is Major Dick, is the character he's playing, which is a yes. riff on Major Blood is the name of a character.
Oh, okay.
Duncan, Professor Duncan, who's so in this season, that is wild.
Yeah.
He is doing a parody of the twins, Tomax and Zaymot.
That makes sense because he's Zimzam.
Yes. So he's Tomax and Zaymot, who are these two like braggadocious twins that always show up and have they give you a lot of shit. And they do have sort of like if you hurt one, you kind of hurt the other sort of feeling.
That was a really funny bit in this yes. episode, I will admit.
That's why there's the other Duncan. Yeah.
Yeah. I really, again, as someone who works in insurance, I really appreciated the joke from the Dean, his character. Our insurance is going up. You people can actually die now. So it yeah. affects the health plan.
Yeah. Chang as Overkill, aka Quick Kick, comes in. We're being invaded by Joes. He has this ability to multiply himself, which is not a thing that I remember.
Yeah,
at all.
He does duplicity, and yet I love Abed being like, just shoot the middle one, probably,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
and he's right.
Shoot him in the shin, and he's like, And so they shoot. They shoot Major Dick in the shin. No, they shoot Zimzam in the shin, and then the Mix Max, the waiter. He feels
it's backwards, right? It's so fun.
Yeah.
Zimzam and Mix Max.
And then Major Dick doesn't need to be taken out because he just takes himself out by trying to fight and
his back.
His poor back. Yeah.
This is when Jeff has the realization of like, oh, I know who you all are. You're all my friends. We're in Greendale. I know all your names.
He's like, I'm having a midlife crisis, basically.
Yeah.
He says that he's been lying about his age, and it's his birthday, and it is his birthday, right? I think is what he's facing.
Yeah. It was his birthday the night before. Yeah.
So he drank a fifth of scotch, and he took these pills that were like anti-aging pills.
Yeah, the youth pills from Koreatown. Yeah. And so he's, so fourth wall is like, oh, I can explain these different like layers of reality. We're in the cartoon layer. But if you have your jet, your wing pack that's sold separately, we can break the barrier. But Jeff doesn't want to go back because he says, I'm only dying out there. In here, we're immortal. And he like makes a comment about, oh, I made you this way. Look at your boobs are going to stay that way for eternity. You're light. You're welcome. But at this point, G.I. Joe and Cobra join forces as Yojobra.
Yojobra.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And yeah, they captured the Greendale 7.
Yes.
But Wingman says we could share the power. We'll be gods here forever. But then the problem is that Jeff discovers it's maybe not so bright and shiny in cartoon world.
So what do boobies look like? Yeah, because they can't take their clothes off.
Yeah, they can't drink scotch.
Costumed. And then is it Jeff is like, I gotta go to the bathroom, I'll be right back. They're like, wait, we don't go to the bathroom.
Yes. So they chase him. He does get his wing pack on, but Commander Cobra latches on to him and he starts going into the real world and he goes, why does my back hurt? Why do I just have random pains in my body? Why is my ability to appreciate new music diminishing?
And you get to see this in the action figure mode as well while he's escaping the commercial. He flies into the kid and knocks the kid out, which was pretty funny, I thought. Mm-hmm. And so then he wakes up in the hospital and everyone's around him. And they realize that he's been keeping his birthday a secret for a while. And he says, I'm 40. And like everyone's like, yeah, we figured you were like, you know, older, that you had to be 30. There seems to be like from Annie a little disappointed that it turns out that Jeff is 40.
Yeah.
It's a big age difference.
It's a big age difference. It's yuck.
It's
to
a
the
big
extreme.
Age difference. It's a big age difference.
Yeah.
Big age difference. Abed says, you guys know I'm 38, right? But he's not.
Yeah, he's kidding. And he says,
still in that pivotal 18 to 49 demo for.
It's valuable to society.
Yes.
But I love the gift they give him from the hospital where they write old. So it's an old boy.
It's an old boy. Mm-hmm. Very funny. All right. So let's get to the end tag here. So
yes.
The end tag is classic G.I. Joe.
Okay.
G.I. Joe would end every episode with like a PSA.
With
some sort of like after school special type of energy.
So don't drink, don't do drugs.
Yeah, like
okay.
And beyond that too, like don't bully people.
Okay.
Like, don't go into a construction site. You know, don't
like so because, specific.
Yes, it gets really specific. It's like don't stand on the edge of a cliff, you'll fall in. Like here's what you do if someone has a sports injury and you don't have your parents around.
What in the world?
Don't go on ice. They're iconic. The this is if you've ever heard, and now I know, and knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe.
Okay.
This is a thing that like transcends G.I. Joe. In the early 2000s, there was this series of internet videos from a person named Fensler Films was the account. And they were these like overdubbed re-edits of the G.I. Joe PSAs that would make them like sometimes like really vulgar, but really ridiculous. And just like highlighting the ridiculousness of the animation and what was being articulated in these PSAs.
Yeah.
And like putting like more blunt language behind it. Very, very funny stuff for a young college-aged Josh Wigler and would be very funny for a now-aged Josh Wigler as well. They do a perfect job aping it. The two teens are doing graffiti. Buzzkill showing up being like, that's a waste of spray paint. Hyper-specific. We live in a fascist police state disguised as a democracy. You think you're going to shatter that illusion by celebrating your own meaningless identities? Hyper-specific. Fourth wall coming in and being like, let's keep the message simple. Graffiti is bad. Go play sports. G.I. Joe. That's exactly like it's an amped up parodied version of how this would always play on G.I. Joe. It is a way ahead for me. And I know you are behind on it. I would give you a streets ahead on this one and a behind on the advanced Dungeons and Dragons would be the
more than willing to make that deal because I think if it, you know, knowing that it is like, I like it in terms of the graffiti is bad. Go play sports. Like it's very ridiculous. And Britta as Buzzkill is really funny. So I'm willing to concede. I'll give this one an ahead.
Okay. All right. And I will go behind for advanced Dungeons.
Beautiful.
Okay. Some feedback that we have for the D&D episode. Aaron says, I don't think it comes comes close to recreating the magic of the first one, and the payoff doesn't really do it for me. I can't put my finger on anything bad about it, but this one just feels a bit NQR, even though on paper it should work. It's good, but not great. The wisecrack Hobbandit, though, says maybe it's the Dean's full commitment to the role play. Maybe it's David Cross singing in fake Elvish. That was pretty funny. Or maybe it's the lack of Pierce being a dick. But I think I like this game of D&D just a smidge more than the first. You get lots of the coolest features by level, or I mean season five. That's funny. So two different perspectives on the D&D of it all. As far as GI Jeff, Jank writes in and says, I think it's an underappreciated episode. Its fatal flaw is that unlike most genre episodes, this one is too hyper-specific, meaning it's harder for viewers unfamiliar with the reference material to appreciate the community spin, and G.I. Joe fans is a pretty narrow window of adult males. That said, the animation done for the episode is absolutely incredible. The core theme of the episode is about dealing with aging, and exploring that through childhood nostalgia is the perfect avenue. And I felt more connected to this episode watching it now than the last time, roughly 3 years ago. Unfortunately, can relate to it a lot more to the theme this time, says Jank. I echo what Jank says. To the full degree of, like, it is for such a specific target. It just so happens, like, it hit me square in the chest. Longtime first time writes in, this one is yet another reason season five is my favorite season. It's such a bright spot, just a gift of crazy, fun, weird TV that was community during this stretch of time. I love Tight Ship and Buzzkill. The end tag is 100% Streets Ahead. Abed and Chang are also perfect, and all the crazy, stupid concept characters. I only didn't love what they did with Shirley. It seemed like they were trying to say something about how they treat her character in general, but they didn't actually say anything. So that is how it breaks down for the feedback here on our F community feedback. Let's do some meow meow beans, Jess. Let's start with you.
Yes. So for D&D, to start off bottom to top, I gave Shirley a 2.5. Again, she's there, but kind of barely. And I hate that, but it kind of is what it is. I gave Jeff and Britta 3s. Again, they're there. They don't do anything super spectacular for me. Moving up from there, I gave Annie a 4 because she was willing to loot Crouton's body. I really enjoyed that. And I don't know if it's just me loving Annie, but I think that is, like, such a funny, real thing. Annie would make a great IRL D&D player. She has the perfect mentality for it.
Yes.
Abed also got a 4, specifically for the interrogation scene. I thought he earned the 4 being a fairly fun dungeon master. Chang got a 4.5 from me. The Times Square and Dingleberry Smash, enough reasons for me to give him a 4.5. I've reserved the only 5 for Dean because I really loved the bit with him and Jeff and the writing the letters and the I hug my father. Mm-hmm. Very funny. So he gets the only 5 for me in this episode.
All right, I'm going to roll dice for my meow meow beans.
Of course.
I'm going to roll dice for my meow meow beans because I just don't feel any real kind of way about this episode other than, like, it missed me. So let's have fun. The meow meow beans were already broken in the meow meow beans episode. So let's just go with some broken dice moves here.
Why not?
So here's what I'll do. I guess I'll roll D4s. Okay, so I'm going to roll D4.
So no one's getting a 5.
Well, there will be modifiers, I think. I think clearly I have a Chang modifier.
Obviously.
I feel like I have a Chang modifier. Who else do I have modifiers on? Shirley?
Did you like what the Dean did?
I did like what the Dean did. So here's what I'll do. I'll put my proficiency bonus to Chang and Dean. I think is how this is going to work.
All right.
And in Dungeons & Dragons right now, my proficiency bonus is a 3.
Holy cannoli!
So Chang and Dean will probably do quite well. Okay, so we're going to roll a D4 for Jeff. Let's see what Jeff got if you want to write these down.
I'm ready.
So Jeff got a 3. I gave Jeff 3 meow meow beans. Pretty good roll for Jeff.
Not bad.
For Britta, I'm rolling a D4. She got 4. 4 meow meow beans.
Holy cow, go Britta.
For Britta. For Abed, rolled a 3 for Abed.
Wow.
For Shirley, I rolled a 4 for Shirley. Good scores.
Wow.
For Annie, I rolled a 4 for
Annie. Yeah, Annie! Wow.
These modifiers are really coming in handy. Uh-huh. Chang, I just rolled a 4. So he gets 7.
How are you going to give him 7?
I'm not giving him 7. He gets 5, though.
Okay.
He ends up with 5.
I'm like, I have to draw the line somewhere here.
I understand that. And then Dean gets, let's see, let's roll the 4. a three. So he also he's gonna end up with five. I'll take a screenshot of this for posterity. There is an errant one that's in there. I will send it to you, Jess, so that you know that I am not just messing around here to rig the game for Cheng. Although I'm like, you know, fairly close to that line, I think.
Yeah.
With that vote. Okay, so those are my meow meow beans for D&D.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so now we got to do some G.I. Joe meow meow beans or G.I. Jeff beans. This I think I want to do based on accuracy and originality too. So,
okay.
Like, so for me, and also personal favorite, Cheng is playing one of my absolute favorite action figures.
There you go.
You can't do it any other way. Cheng is going to get a five. Abed, they did a great job having Abed be like, this is a really questionable character to have in spirit as fourth wall. I'll give him four as in fourth wall. Annie, very funny as well here. I'm going to give Annie, I think I'll give Annie four. I like Shipwreck a lot. I like Stalker, but I don't like Stalker that much. And I didn't feel like if there was something that they were trying to do with Shirley, I didn't feel like I totally got it. I'm giving Shirley 3.5. Rita, I can't crack the buzzkill code, and I don't know that I would be willing to move this score after the fact. I'm going to give her a 3.5. Dean, I think that they missed an opportunity with Dean. I'm giving Dean a 3. I think with Dean, they missed an opportunity for him to be Zartan. So Zartan is a G.I. Joe who is a master of disguise. He's like constantly wearing different disguises and people are like he's infiltrating groups and then like he leaves the group and he rips off his mask and haha, it's Zartan. And that's so Dean. And they already have Cobra Commander in the episode anyway. So I don't know why they're doing that, but everyone's going to get a pretty high score because I like this episode a good amount. Winger's kind of boring, but if it's not for him, this episode doesn't exist. I'll give him 3.5. Those are my meow meow beans for G.I. Jeff.
Okay. We have no movement.
What did you do?
Right. Yeah. Pretty simple. I gave 2.5s across the board, except for Britta, who I gave a 3 because I think Buzzkill is very funny. I like the idea of Buzzkill. I think she's funny in the end tag, and I like the idea of her having this like honking saw on the end of her hand. So I give her a 3. Again, this episode just doesn't do it for me because I don't understand it. I don't get most of the references. It's fine. Like it's I understand like the undertaking of an animated episode, something to be like praised. But like if I don't understand it and I don't think it's funny, it's not really worthwhile for me. So I gave everyone 2.5 except Britta, who gets a 3, and we have no movement in the charts, which means currently with two episodes and one podcast left, Cheng is in the lead with 108.5, a 5-point lead over Shirley at a 103.5, which is a very big lead at this point.
That's a pretty big lead with two episodes left. I will be very happy to see Cheng win this thing if he is able to do it. Good times here on my side of the computer. Feeling happy about
it. I'm not mad about it. I can admit when Cheng is good, and Cheng has been good.
He's had a hell of a season. It's been great. Dean's listing it. I think you and I are in lockstep with our Dean's list. Hickey for the D&D episode for sure. Cobra Commander is so funny in the G.I. Jeff episode. He's my favorite for sure. He was your favorite of all of the various cartoon characters.
He was because first of all, the eulogy scene was very funny. Where he's like, because even if I didn't get the references, I thought it was like funny that like, okay, you're having a eulogy for an action figure, but he's like, we've never had to do this before. And I also loved the joke of like, he was just my platonic friend, nothing more. And like you said, the voice, even though I didn't understand the reference to the voice, I did find the voice to be very cartoon action figure-y type of thing.
Yes.
And so I really liked Cobra Commander. I thought he was a very fun character to have a one-off of. So I gave him my Dean's List point.
They did a good job with Cobra Commander. I gave my point to him as well. So 2 for Hickey, 2 for Cobra Commander. Hickey has clinched this thing at this point. He will be the Dean's List winner for season 5. That should not be a surprise at all.
Yep.
Doing the cools, I'm going to roll again. Again for my cool for the score for D&D. I am going to roll a D4, but unfortunately, I did not invest in this stat, Jess, and I think that I have a -1 modifier to my D4. So the highest that I will give Advanced Dungeons & Dragons is a 3. This could be very bad.
This could be really bad.
Could be really, really bad. Let's find out. I'm hitting the four. I will send you the screenshot as well, Jess, so that you know there's no chicanery. Hitting the four. And it is a natural four with a minus one that gives it a three. I will give
Advanced
Dungeons & Dragons three cools. And I'm not happy about it. One of those times where I was hoping I would roll poorly. And yet. Them's the breaks. What did you do for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, Jess?
I gave it a 2.5. Maybe that's lower than some people would think I would do. I just, to me, there's not a ton, it doesn't make a ton of sense with who we know Hickey to be. And it doesn't have enough funny moments for me to feel like it warrants a higher score.
Yeah.
And so maybe some people think that is low, but I ended up giving it a 2.5, which is much lower than the audience's 3.49.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Both of us are really out of touch with how people feel about this episode.
I think it's just like people want to like a D&D episode, and I can't blame them for that. Sure. And there are funny moments. It's just, to me, it doesn't when you're, again, when you're doing a successor to an existing episode, for me, it has to knock it out of the park, and it didn't. Yeah. So 2.91 current average for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons.
Rating GI Jeff, I'm going to go high on this one, and it is personal bias, but it hits me squarely in the zone. I'm giving it 3.8 cools. That is obviously really, really, really high compared to some of the people who don't like this one. I hope that I authentically articulated why this one might have worked.
You definitely did. I get it. Like,
totally
if they had made...
Totally get you representing the people it really didn't connect with.
If they had made, like, a Barbie episode, really, to me, like, there's things from my youth that if they had made a Neopets episode, they had made specific episodes tailored to my interests that alienated others, I of course would be giving it a very high score. So I get it. Of course, I do not feel that way about this episode. I don't get a lot of the jokes. I gave it a 1.9, and that was to me as high as I could possibly go when I really didn't understand half of what was going on. The audience a little bit higher than me, 2.53, which rounds us out to a 3.06 on GI Jeff, which means these episodes are 9th and 10th. So just there's only one episode, Bondage and Beta Male Sexuality, which is lower. GI Jeff with a 3.06 and Advanced D&D for 2.91.
Okay. See, the other thing too is I was expecting, because I had heard that there was a G.I. Joe episode, but I didn't know anything else beyond that, that there's like an animated G.I. Joe episode that people didn't like.
That's Okay.
That's what I had heard, and I thought it was a season four episode. And so when it never showed up in season four, I was like, okay, so Dan Harmon's doing this one, I guess. And so I went from having like really low expectations to suddenly having like fairly medium to high expectations of like, okay, if Dan Harmon does a G.I. Joe episode and like F's this up, that sucks. He didn't. I think he aced it. So worked really well for me. We've got two more episodes of Community Season 5 to talk about, Jess, coming next to the podcast. Basic Story and Basic Sandwich is the name of the finale.
Those are the names.
All right. Sometimes I could go for a basic sandwich.
I always can go for a basic sandwich.
Like, what's your best basic sandwich?
I mean, is an Italian mix a basic sandwich, or is that too much?
I think that's a little more than a basic sandwich.
I would go with like a salami and provolone cheese with mustard.
That's basic. That's a very basic delicious
sandwich.
That's tasty. Yeah, like a ham and cheese sandwich. That's a basic sandwich that
ham and cheese with mayo. Nom.
Sandwich with Swiss, I'd crush that. I'd eat that. It's a basic sandwich. So I hope that we like the basic sandwich that Community has to offer up quite as much as those sandwiches we've just outlined. I'm a little worried, I guess, for these final two episodes of Community Season 5 reputationally, but I will say that sight unseen, and even with not connecting with Advanced D&D, I'm still loving this season quite a bit. It's been a really lovely surprise. I've been very happy with it.
I would say that like a basic sandwich, I don't mind that much. Like, I think it's like okay finale. I don't think it's a bad episode. I don't think either of these are like bad episodes. Mm-hmm. I think when you just start off as strong as season five did, this one kind of ends with a thud when you compare it to the other episodes.
No question.
And of course we're losing. We don't have Troy anymore. Like, there are multiple reasons why it's not as good. And again, I think when I would like throw out there my season rankings, Troy being absent for most of season five is the number one reason why it falls below other seasons for me.
Totally fair. I think that that's totally reasonable. Well, we'll see how I feel at the end of season five. When we get there next week, we are going to be talking about the final two episodes of season five. If you want to make sure you're getting your scores in for those episodes and the rest of season five, we encourage you to do so right into community building at postshowrecaps.com or community at postshowrecaps.com to send us your scores. You could also send us your scores on Patreon if you are a patron of Post Show Recaps, whether as a patron message or on the Discord if you're in the Discord. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps to sign up at any level, and you can send us your scores that away. Make sure you're subscribed to the Community Building Podcast as well. You'll never miss an episode of the show, or become a patron and get those ad-free, often early access drops for Community Building. Jess, what kind of shit have the 90s taught you recently, and what's up elsewhere in Post Show Recaps land for you?
Yeah, so Dawson's Creek, we are coming to the end of season five. And let me tell you, did you remember there was an episode where Pacey and this older woman nearly get into a car accident because she's lost her mind? I certainly didn't remember that, but it happened and it's a mess. So we're having a lot of fun going into the final season of Dawson's Creek. And of course, it's March. And you know what March means? March Madness. So we're going to have a bracket coming up this season. TBD, it's going to be a lot of fun. We have some plans for it. You could find us at Shit90s Pod here on Post Show Recaps. It's mostly just Succession. It's like all Succession, all the time. All Succession, always, forever. We're doing a daily recap of Succession. If you hadn't already heard, go check it out. It's been one of my favorite things to... It's just like one of my favorite projects to work on, to be honest, because... Succession, if you hadn't heard, is my number one favorite show. It's so good. It's so delightful. And getting it to revisit it and kind of rate all of these characters has been a ton of fun. And of course, The Last of Us is finishing up. Zed and I are still doing our playthrough. So I'll finally get to see the end of the video game.
Very close, yeah.
I'm really, really excited about it. So go check out all of that. And you could find me at the Jess Sterling on Twitter.
Amazing. I'm at Round Howard, wherever you can find me, including on those daily Succession podcasts and elsewhere here on Post Show Recaps, as well as next week, those final two episodes of season five of Community. We will be back shortly to discuss those episodes. Until then, everybody, Corey B, take us away.
This is a show in season five. If I could
Baba Booey, Baba Booey, Baba Booey.
Shut up, Leonard.
Wiggler and Jess, here till it ends. Meet up to pass or fail Greendale with all of our friends. The brightest timeline makes you say,
touché.
Community building is here to stay.
Unsubscribe.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.